You are listening to the Effective Statistician Podcast, the weekly podcast with Alexander Schacht and Benjamin Pieske, designed to help you reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients while having a great work-life balance. In addition to our premium courses on the Effective Statistician Academy, we also have lots of free resources for you across all kind of different topics within that academy. Head over to theeffectivestatistician.com and find the academy and much more for you to become an effective statistician. I'm producing this podcast in association with PSI, a community dedicated to leading and promoting the use of statistics within the healthcare industry for the benefit of patients. Join PSI today to further develop your statistical capabilities with access to the ever-growing video on demand content library, free registration to all PSI webinars, and much, much more. Head over to the PSI website at psiweb.org to learn more about PSI activities and become a PSI member today. Welcome to a new episode of The Effective Statistician. And today I have someone that is actually quite well known on LinkedIn. Jaco, how are you doing?
Thank you for a fantastic introduction, Alexander. And I'm doing great. Really happy to be the guest of your podcast and really looking forward to discussing some interesting topics with you.
Yeah. What have brought you to the space where you are now? Maybe you can give a short overview of your CV.
Of course. I'm someone who is working as a biostatistician for various companies around the world, but I'm also someone who enjoys building digital products, especially in a field of AI. So that's related to one of the topics that we will be discussing today, which is a specific platform called BioAI Works. I would say that the time we live in and the developments that are happening in AI, everything is moving so quickly. So I will try to speak about different items which may be related to specific solutions for specific problems that exist today within different research domains. And again, I would like to thank you for the chance to discuss this.
Yeah, thanks so much. Before we dive into the content, I can highly recommend you to follow Jaco on LinkedIn. You can join lots of others that are following him for his continuous knowledge sharing. And of course, we'll put the link to Jaco's LinkedIn as well as to the tool we want to talk about into the show notes. So yeah, you mentioned already your platform, BioAI Works. Can you tell us a little bit about the problems that it solves?
Yeah, BioAI Works is a platform that I started building, I think, over 2 years ago. And initially, it was envisioned to create a connection between biostatistics and artificial intelligence. The connection between biostatistics and artificial intelligence involves a lot of biological fields as well. Mm-hmm. So that was my initial idea for BioAI Works. However, as the AI development and evolution started to become faster with much more dynamics, many new ideas came to my mind. And right now, the focus is on specific problems that AI models, which are, by the way, they're fantastic. So everything that we're seeing with large language models, such as ChatGPT, OpenAI models, other models such as Llama, Grok, it's really a field where a lot of fantastic developments are happening. However, large language models have a specific set of problems that are related to hallucinations and accuracy. Even though large language models can do a lot of fantastic, perform a lot of fantastic tasks, especially in the field of generative tasks, generative AI, they have been struggling with that scientific, statistical accuracy that us as statisticians usually want to have. The specific problem where BioAI Works is, it's a significant portion of BioAI Works, its focus today is trying to be different in that way so that AI models that are developed at BioAIWorks will have a higher level of reliability. So there will be a lot of different checks that AI models need to pass to produce a specific output. So that's one of the main problems that we're trying to solve today. When I say we, for BioAIWorks, I'm partnering, even though I started building BioAIWorks a few years ago, in development of certain AI models, I'm partnering with a great company, Oi Analytica, and we're looking to build a diverse set of AI models. So one approach I just mentioned, but there are other approaches that we're also looking to explore, such as precision medicine research, precision drug discovery using generative AI in drug discovery as well, and also AI models, which would be able to solve one problem, which is often found in statistics and data science, which is the hidden patterns that are in the data that we don't see using the standard approaches. However, we are now in the process of development of an AI model called the Universal Constructor, which main ability is to try to identify those difficult to find patterns in the data and then produce entire data sets of hidden patterns of what we don't see just by looking into correlations, associations, and other standard statistical approaches such as linear logistic regression and so on. So we're trying to combine the foundation that we have in biostatistics and statistics and the rigor that we have in those scientific fields with the capabilities of artificial intelligence and try to improve artificial intelligence by making it more accurate and more reliable.
When you talk about reliability, can you expand a little bit on what that means to you?
Yes, there are actually multiple fields we are exploring when we speak about reliability. So one of those fields is obviously statistics, basic domain, which is always needed in some way. The basic accuracy, the receiver operative characteristic, other metrics that we have in statistics. When we create outputs, we want to know that these outputs are statistically accurate and cross-validated, which means that any output that is created, it's validated in a certain way. It's not just generated as an output and produced. It needs to be validated in this process that we are trying to build at the core of AI models. But of course, this is just one side of the story. There are other approaches that we're experimenting with in improving the validity of outputs with the domain-specific checks and balances. Partnering with Oi Analytica, we have a whole team of scientists from different biological spheres, including molecular biology, biostatistics, statistical programming, other fields of life science. And we are trying to create a domain-specific set of rules that AI model needs to follow so that the outputs that it creates are more valid, more accurate, and less prone to that very frequent problem with today's AI models, which is hallucination. So that's one issue that we want to avoid at all cost, which is hallucination of AI models.
Well, what's a hallucination? So I'm just thinking about kind of psychiatry and hallucinations. But if you're talking about hallucinations, you probably mean something different. What's an hallucination of an AI model?
Good point. So hallucination in AI models is a completely different item, different research field compared to the psychiatric and psychological terms. So in AI models, hallucinations are very frequent. Almost every AI model built today has some form of hallucinations when specific prompts are prompted towards that AI model. This is happening mainly due to the fact that most AI models, at least today, are generative, which means that at the core of their functionality is that they are trying to generate new patterns and new sequences from text, but still trying to make sense of those sequences. So when we ask a question to an AI LLM model, it will try to answer that question as accurately as possible, given all the knowledge that it has acquired during the training process. But at the same time, it will try to be creative a little bit. It will try to be generative and try to generate potentially patterns that don't exist in the original data. Now, this is from one angle okay, because generative AI models allow a lot of flexibility. That's the foundational principle that enables those impressive answers that a lot of AI models can produce. However, it has a downside. The downside is that given all that complexity, all the training data that is included in training those AI models, combined with its creativity and generative capabilities, trying to create some new patterns, sometimes, actually very often, I would say, these new patterns are randomly created.
It could be said, don't know, it makes up clinical trials that doesn't exist. Yeah, just because there's one-armed studies that are existing and it combines these into a clinical trial and says, compares these kind of different things, something like this.
I think you made a great example. So a lot of times an AI model will try to combine the information that it has. And in specific situation, it doesn't have this critical angle. Maybe sometimes there is not enough information to make a specific conclusion, but an AI model will still try to use its generative capabilities to create a specific story for that answer. And sometimes that may actually be just randomness, just as you said, a random hallucinated clinical trial, let's call it that way. And that would be one case example. However, there are many other examples where a generative AI model, this is especially the case for large language models, because they are trained very often on large amounts of textual data. Mm-hmm. Most large language models today actually ingest majority of the text that exists on the internet. And that's how they're trained. We can just imagine how many possible combinations can those AI models create from that text. Sometimes that text is inaccurate. Sometimes it doesn't resemble what we are trying to find. Sometimes it doesn't have a scientific foundation. Sometimes it has scientific foundation, but large language models really struggle from differentiating this. If we take, scientists can take a critical perspective when he or she reads literature. We can say, okay, this is just a blog post that someone wrote, or we can say, oh, this is a peer-reviewed clinical trial study, which is very rigorous, and then I will trust more that peer-reviewed study. And there are so many nuances there. So human intelligence naturally has built-in mechanisms to critically evaluate things. Mm-hmm. And AI models are still struggling there. So to be able to prevent those hallucinations, we need these mechanisms that will critically evaluate data or anything that's generated, anything that's generative, that's novel, to differentiate what could be reality and what could be a hallucination for that model.
Okay. So one thing that, by the way, I want to do is less hallucinations. The other thing you mentioned is reliability. And you mentioned like example, like receiver operating curves. So in order to create a receiver operating curve, you need to have something like a gold standard, yeah, that you compare against. How do you create a gold standard? Is it based on simulations or something like this?
Yes. So this is what one of the approaches that we are exploring. So using AI models to identify causal patterns in data. And for this specific field, we are using a lot of simulations to simulate causal associations, mathematically simulate them, and then try to transpose this into a real world situation. So that's one of the approaches. The other approach that we are exploring is, even though we are developing a lot of advanced technologies, because these are more technologies today than just saying, oh, this is a model. We know from statistics and from data science that a model is not very useful unless it's a part of a specific product that can productionalize that model and bring real value to its user. we're exploring approaches that we know from previous experiments that were reliable and accurate. And when we create something generative, when we try to explore another advanced step, we always step back and compare to that specific approach that we knew. We had a large sensitivity, specificity, area under the curve. So all those statistical metrics that we typically use in statistics. And I would use this chance to mention how important statistics and biostatistics is in AI development. Practically all AI models are at the end analyzed using some form of statistics. And even the modeling itself is something that comes from statistics. We use a lot of statistical approaches there, but we still try to combine them with advanced approaches that come from other fields, such as being able to generate text, being able to generate AI agents that can perform a specific task, which are not usually used in statistics or any similar field.
You mentioned the words AI agent. But what's that?
AI agent is actually an entity that can utilize that AI model to perform a specific task. AI agent can actually has a level of autonomy, right? It's not fully autonomous yet. There may be some companies around the world that are trying to develop fully autonomous agent, but most of them are actually semi-autonomous, which means that we can set a specific goal to that agent, and that agent, the AI agent, will try to find various solutions on its own. We don't have to write all the prompts. So an AI model, which is not an agent, we would need to provide practically all instructions on our own. For example, we want an AI model to perform task one and then to perform task two, task three, task four, and so on. So we have to provide inputs all the time. An AI agent is an entity which is just given with a goal, and it will figure out all the tasks that it needs to perform, and it can perform them on its own. As such, AI agents are very useful for BioAI Works platform, because biological AI models are always very complicated. And this makes sense because biological systems are complicated. So if we take a look at how DNA, RNA, molecular biology works, if we look at how clinical trials work, how biomarkers work, there's huge complexity there. We're talking about thousands, tens of thousands of different variables. And as such, AI models dealing with all these variables and with all this complexity usually involves a multi-step process where an AI model needs, for example, first to pre-process the data, then to connect a specific data to its biological domain, then to create a specific predictive model, and then to test and validate that predictive model, and then to create a specific outputs for the user. So an AI agent would be able to do all this just with setting up the goal, setting up what's your goal. And if an AI agent is well optimized, it will perform all these tasks on its own.
Okay, so it's basically, yeah, I like the approach that you say, connect lots of different prompts into one. Somehow a meta prompt. What is typical question or specific use case that you foresee for your bio AI work platform?
That's a great question. So the first use case is obviously related to one of the fields what I was working for a significant portion of my career, which is oncology research. There are a variety of use cases that we are exploring right now, but one of those use cases is related to creating AI agents that can accurately predict how these molecules called antigens, neoantigens, on the surface of cancerous cells can be recognized by immune system. So it has potential application in many fields, from immunology to cancer vaccine research, mRNA vaccine research. It's still in developmental phase, research phase. However, that's one of the use cases that we foresee. And again, our focus is not just to create a model that can produce fancy outputs, that look impressive. Our goal is to create a model and integrate that model into digital products that can provide as accurate as possible outputs. From that reliability foundation, we want to build on other advanced features of this model. That's one of the models that we are developing, a peptide predicting model for cancer research. And another model is more general. I already mentioned it before, which is the universal constructor. So it's very general. It would enable people to potentially find patterns in the data that previously could not be found. Again, we have a lot of use cases that we are envisioning here. Some of them are, again, related to finding maybe biological targets that could not be found before because of all the complexity in the data, or uncovering biomarkers that could not be uncovered before. Of course, precision medicine research is another field that all these models could be potentially associated with. So we're trying to target specific problems that exist there, specific problems in the data and the data science that revolves around all data in life science, and try to iterate this much better, much faster. When I say iterate better and faster, I mean about the scale. A lot of data is generated today on a daily basis in life science, and significant improvements are very often dependent on how fast and how well can a model scale on using a lot of data at the same time and uncovering a lot of patterns at the same time and performing a lot of tasks very quickly. So that's another item that we're discussing very often.
So one of the things that you would look into, for example, is high dimensional data. For example, if I'm collecting continuously blood levels and several variables around my body because I have diabetes, and that creates lots of data because on a per second basis, you create data over days, months, weeks, maybe years. And for potentially lots of patients that use these monitors, that is both high dimensional in terms of the number of patients as well as the number of data points that you collect. So that is some kind of use case that you would foresee.
Yes, I think that's a very specific concrete use case. And I can definitely foresee that item because a lot of the problems, as you probably know, and I think we actually discussed this, a lot of the problems in statistics and data science and in research in general come from the high dimensionality and high complexity of the data. Mm-hmm. And there are so many, not just so many variables, but also so many study designs, so many contextual information, so many differences that exist in the real world that we maybe don't see in a clinical trial. In a clinical trial, we have a very rigorous specific setting, very specific inclusion criteria. We have randomization. So all those things that try to correct the bias that could come externally towards the study. However, in the real world, things are very often more complicated. That's one difference that we see in real world evidence that we don't see in clinical trials. Usually comes from that complexity and high dimensionality. So high dimensionality, very difficult to resolve. And AI is definitely one of the potential solutions. So that's another item that we are also exploring. And a lot of updates will be on BioAI Works regarding this specific field, which is the high complexity, high dimensionality of the data. People usually tend to favor simpler models, settings, because they're just easier to work with and they're more explainable.
Yeah.
However, when we take a neural network that has 10 billion parameters, it's very difficult to explain to any human how those 10 billion parameters work, how the model actually works, what are the specific weights on those between those neurons and so on. However, if that specific approach will produce a result that will solve a specific problem in the real world, then it has its use case, even though we can't fully explain it.
So it doesn't need to be, from my point of view, it doesn't need to be explainable as long as it's interpretable. Yeah. So there's a lot of work on into machine learning and interpretable AI. And so I would refer to that. I actually recorded a podcast episode about exactly that topic some time ago. So just scroll back in your podcast.
Well, this, and I think the item that you explained is a very important, there is a debate about this, how to think about explainability and predictive performance. However, there is another angle, which is interpretability. If we know where the data comes from, how is that data potentially related to the outcome that we're trying to predict? Even though we can't explain, we could potentially explain, but it just wouldn't make sense to explain a billion parameter model. However, if we can explain the data, if we can explain the context around the data, if we can make it interpretable towards the outcome, then we resolve most of the problems that exist in that field. And on the other hand, we get the power of AI models as a big plus in that specific use case.
So thanks so much for diving into this. I certainly learned quite a lot about AI and its limitations, its use cases, its opportunities, and how we can tame it from a statistical point of view a little bit. If people want to work with you on these kind of different topics, how can they best reach you? And where can they learn more about BioAI Works?
Yeah, so the BioAI Works is a project that's in development, and it will be productionalized very soon. Anyone can find more information on the website, bioaiworks.com. However, I can also be contacted directly on LinkedIn, so I can be easily found on LinkedIn by searching for Darko Medin. Any questions, any interest related to BioAI Works is most welcome. Also, any suggestions, any potential use cases that we haven't explored so far would be very welcome. And again, I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak at the Effective Statistician podcast. And I also want to recommend everyone to follow the podcast. It's really a golden source of very valuable information for statisticians, but also for anyone in many different scientific fields. And I would also recommend everyone to follow Alexander Schacht, who is someone who I learned from a lot. I've known Alexander for a while, and I learned a lot from Alexander, so definitely recommend following his content.
Thank you so much, Darko. Thank you for coming on the show, and see you again, and most likely on LinkedIn.
Thank you very much, Alexander. Special thanks to you for this chance, and looking forward to speaking with you again.
This show was created in association with PSI. Thanks to Rain and her team at VVS who helped with the show in the background, and thank you for listening. Reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients. Just be an effective statistician.